Hello, everybody, and welcome to This Game Where with me, Ashley.
And me, Chris. Hello, everyone. Hello, Ashley.
Hello, me. Hello, you.
You all right?
Is that a song?
What? Probably.
Same me. So it's Lionel Richie. I think it's Lionel Richie.
Right.
It's Lionel Richie in my head.
I don't know what song you're on about.
Say me, say you, or something like that. It's not hello me, hello you.
No.
He does hello. And he does.
And he does the ceiling one.
Say me, say you.
And that.
And the dancing on the ceiling, yeah. But I think I've put hello and say me, say you, or whatever that one's called, together. Say it together, you know, naturally, that one.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's not a game. We probably shouldn't be talking about
it. No.
Sorry. Sorry, everyone. Are you all right?
I'm good, thanks. See you.
Yeah.
We're in the same room. And it feels awkward. I don't know why.
Does it?
A little bit.
Well, that guy helped. A bit of old Lionel Richie banter.
Yeah, Lionel Richie banter.
I don't usually do banter, but you bring Lionel Richie into the room.
I didn't bring anything.
I think you did. Oh, no, it was me. No, it was you.
Also,
yeah,
2024, it's, you know, about time for us to talk about Lionel Richie, isn't it? 30 years after
the fact. Do people know who Lionel Richie is?
Yes.
Leave a comment. Come to our social media and tell us if you don't know who Lionel Richie is or whatever. Because, you know, we're old enough that we do, unfortunately. Although he wasn't around when...
No.
Like,
he was
banging about, but...
He did the Legends Lock Glastonbury a few years ago, and everyone went mad for him.
Really?
Yep.
Rubbish.
He was good.
Meh. I don't know. I don't like it. We were talking about a particular restaurant and how that was sort of time capsule. Lionel Richie, when he started, I think he was probably a bit of a time capsule.
He's all right.
He's Lionel Richie. He's not a baddie. I'm not saying he's a baddie. I'm just saying that his music always, it feels a bit, this is not what we're supposed to be talking about.
No, and also don't come join us on social media and tell us about Lionel Richie, please.
No, please
for the
do.
Love of God.
I'm very much up for listening to people's thoughts on Lionel Richie. Come tell us.
Right.
Are you actually all right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah? Okay, yeah. Good. Because you've been talking about Lionel Richie for a long time.
He can't stop me.
It feels like a cry for help.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah.
What's today's game, pal?
Oh, we're not... That's our...
That's it.
Right,
that's
okay. Well, this game... this week's game is this game where you play as twins with supernatural gifts, trapped and terrorized by a mysterious and terrifying village.
Is it 40 Winks?
No.
Oh. What's the console?
PlayStation 2.
Twins in a village?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
It is one of the scariest games ever made.
Oh, no.
It's what some people say. And I'd say that too.
Oh, great. So this game's going to give me the willies then?
It's going to give me the willies before it gives you them.
Oh, I don't want to get the willies.
Well, the thing is, right, so one of the reasons that I've brought this game is because I've played it for about an hour and shat myself too hard, so I had to stop. I haven't touched it since. And that was 20 years ago. About 20 years ago.
I was playing it today at your house at 10 past 10 in the morning with streaming
daylight. And you're going to play it in the daytime... So that I can watch you play it and actually see what the game's like.
Oh, no. Okay, I think that's probably the best time to play it, really.
Yeah, I've tried, actually, in the daylight. And it still didn't go very well.
Oh, no.
I had to turn it off. So, but that was... that. I've got a very particular set of circumstances around this game that meant that it was a particularly scary situation.
Is it the one with the camera where the coins moved?
Yes.
I remember you telling the story.
Do you remember what it's called?
Fatal Frame?
So that's the American name.
Right.
In the UK, in Europe, it was called... and I don't think it is actually now. I was going to say it is and it was and is still called, but I'm not sure it is. But it was called Project Zero.
Yes.
This is the sequel, Project Zero to Crimson Butterfly.
Why is it called Crimson Butterfly?
Well, because Crimson Butterflies feature... To some degree in the plot. Certainly, the story begins with a pair of twins who are at a favourite childhood playing spot. They're sort of teenagers. And one of them chases a very deep crimson-red butterfly into the woods. No. And that's how things go wrong.
Yeah.
You shouldn't chase butterflies anyway. It
feels
a bit cruel.
That's what I think from that.
You shouldn't be outside.
No, just stay inside all the time.
It was so this game was made by Tecmo, or Koei Tecmo, as people might have known them or might know them now. And it was published in 2004 and 2005. So 2004 in Japan and the US, and then 2005 basically everywhere else. Okay. The European release was then in February in Europe.
Romantic.
And that must mean then that I got it probably around, I think I got it for Christmas. So it would have been Christmas 2005, end of the year.
Oh, okay.
I mean, out for a year by then.
I thought February 2005, I was Valentine's Day, thinking that's how you'd spent it. But no, it was Christmas that year.
No, it was not Valentine's Day. Although, you know, sounds quite a nice, genuinely, quite a nice way to spend some time together. Being terrified out of your seat. I don't know. It's the second series in the game, hence the moniker 2.
Second series in the game.
It's the second game in the series, hence what you wouldn't call it a subtitle, the number 2 the being in the title. It's not nomenclature, is it?
No, it's not.
But it's in the name. Yeah, you like that word. I know you like that word. It's the second series in the game, but the plot of the first game and part of the second game don't really follow one from another, and there are very specific circumstances as to why that is. They are as follows.
Did you play the first one before?
No, I didn't. I jumped in on this one. The first game, according to the director, whose name is Makoto Shibata, players didn't finish it, and they didn't finish it because it was too scary.
Oh no.
I didn't know any of this, and we will come to my experience with the game later. But I've always held this one up as the scariest thing I've ever played.
Oh god!
And I only, as I say, played it for an hour or two. I really can't remember exactly how long I played it, but I know that I played it on about 3 or 4 separate occasions. Really was enjoying it, but also it scared me so bad. That I couldn't play it. So we'll come back to that.
And it's lived with you 20 years on. You still remember how scared it made you feel.
Yes. What I didn't know is that wasn't just on me, because I'm generally a scaredy cat when it comes to games. What I didn't realise is that is a shared experience. I thought I was on my own, but it's not just me. It's everybody.
Right.
The first Project Zero, or Fatal Frame, depending on where you are, it was supposedly so scary that people weren't finishing it. That was Makoto Shibata's takeaway from it. Maybe he was just comforting himself. Maybe it was copium, or whatever people call it now. but that was his surmising. And they started making this game fairly soon after the first one's release. And the goal was to make people play it to the end.
So to make it less scary.
No, that was not their solution. And that's what I thought you would think. That's not what they did. What they did instead was to try and make the story so compelling that people would put up with being absolutely shit scared and just carry on. It didn't work for me because it was too scary. But yeah, his idea was that they would make the story such a mysterious and compelling experience that you would just have to know what's going to happen. The problem was with that they made the rest of it too scary still for me to really focus on the story. I was focused on not getting attacked by ghosts.
And not bobbing yourself.
Yes, genuinely.
Do you remember anything about the story at all?
I do remember some of it. We will come to it. So they made a conscious choice to make horror and terror like the main drive of the game. And Eurogamer wrote a review where they compared two types or two styles of the horror genre. They took the Resident Evil style. And they also took the Silent Hill style. Mm-hmm. And they considered where does Project Zero 2 actually sit. And it sits very firmly in the Silent Hill style of horror games. What that means is, and this is what Makoto Shibata has kind of said as well in other words, what that means is it's a game that does not go for bombast. It doesn't go for jump scares.
Yeah.
And that kind of like immediate, heart-pounding, I'm scared in the moment sort of thing. It goes for this instead.
Low level sense of dread and yes. like psychological.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's worse.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So I'm playing at the moment. I'm playing Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown mm-hmm. on the Xbox, and there is a section in that that is the deep dark down part, and it's got this soundscape of eerie choral screams, and it's pretty horrifying in a very sort of low level way, and that's kind of also it's a light version of what I experienced with this, and it's also it's exactly what Makoto Shibata was going for. That's exactly what they wanted to try and create. They wanted to create something that it wasn't about gore, and it wasn't about jump scares. It wasn't action focused. It was very much horror focused. So that's what you're in for.
Well, the films, that horror films that I've watched, the ones where it is that constant low level dread that is quite unsettling, those are the ones that stay with me and the ones I enjoy more than the ones where it's lashings of blood and guts everywhere, because I just see through that and just see it as special effects and stuff. Whereas the ones that are going away at my brain, they're the ones that stay with me so much more.
That absolutely the same experience for me. I do still enjoy the more bombastic horror films, but the ones that I particularly like, the ones that I would recommend to other people are the ones that that haunt me.
Yeah.
And that's this game. So in a way, maybe I should be recommending it. Do you know who Neil Druckmann is?
Neil?
Druckmann?
Nope.
Last of Us, Uncharted.
Oh, okay.
Director.
I know those games.
Game director. Yeah. So you just said about, you kind of naturally segued into films, because I think a lot of people, their touchstone for horror is generally in the film medium. Neil Druckmann described this game as the scariest kind of experience in any medium, and he hasn't seen a film that's come close.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. And again, I didn't know it had that kind of reception. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it had that kind of reputation when I was in my bedroom being terrified by it.
Is it of comfort, though, to know that other people were scared?
To some degree, yeah. But I also... So a game that came out on the other side of that Resi Silent Hill spectrum around the same time was Resident Evil 4. That was, I think, 2005 as well. January 2005, possibly?
I don't know. I've never played Resident Evil 4. I bought it, but never played it. Well, as a tradition.
I played Resident Evil 4 probably in 2007. And it was at the behest of a good friend of mine who I was living with at the time. And I explained my predicament. I can't really play scary games. They scare me too much. And he said, no, this one is sensational. You have to. I said, but I've played Resident Evil 1. I've played Resident Evil 2. And I was too scared of the zombies eating my face.
I remember when we played Resident Evil 1, in whichever episode it was.
Oh, yeah.
And you being really quite resistant the whole time.
About, yeah, it was like, horrible. Oh. Even the experience of playing it, I found it easier to play it then than I ever have before, but it was still just like very tense, very nerve-wracking, yeah. And my grip on the controller was ironclad. Like I couldn't let go of that controller if I'd wanted to, and I did want to bang out from the very start. And that's always been the way that I've been. So I came into Resident Evil 4 with the same thing, but with the added bonus of I played this game sort of a year or so before and had the most terrifying experience with it. I sat down with Resident Evil 4 in a beanbag, the most comfortable of
absolutely
of seating arrangements for a horror game. He really tried to put me at my ease. My friend was in the room with me. People that have played Resident Evil 4, not Chris, because he hasn't, people that played Resident Evil 4 will know how little I actually played of it when I describe this. I walked down the path towards the town, towards the village square, and I popped in the side, like a cabin on the side of this path, and there was a chest. I opened the chest, I got, I think, some ammo for my gun. I turned round. A zombie was in the doorway coming at me. I shot at it, but round it. Exhausted all of my ammo. Passed the controller to my friend and said, no, no, I don't think I can play this. All that time going down the path. It's a very short path. It's also, for Chris's benefit, the first path. My heart was boom, 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 boom in my chest. And that apparently it's got a really nice, a really great, I was only talking about it with some people the other week, this week, just gone. Apparently there is a very famous opening to Resident Evil 4 in the village square. I didn't even get to what people call the opening.
Right.
That was scary enough. This is scarier.
Right.
Project Zero 2 is scarier.
Do you think though, because you went into Resident Evil 4 with having had the experience of this game, do you think you were just on edge from the off, just the sheer concept of playing a horror game?
I think at that point I had decided that horror games weren't for me, and that's something actually that I've maintained ever since. I can't really play horror games.
Yeah, I mean, so, go back to that quote you just said from that guy about things.
Druckmann.
Thank you. About how this is the scariest thing in any medium. It tends to, I'm just trying to think about the last horror film I watched, and horror, I do watch some horror films, but it's not something I naturally gravitate towards. And it's the same with games. And also, we were talking before we started recording, actually, about Stephen King books. And I do enjoy reading Stephen King books, but I don't necessarily go out of my way to read them. So as a genre, horror itself isn't really something I have particularly, I'm not really au fait with.
Right. So I am kind of the opposite in a film sense. I really like the horror genre. And I seek out horror films, and I'll watch crap horror films and in the hopes that they're good. And the thing that I'm looking for is exactly what we talked about. I'm looking to be haunted. I'm Yep. looking to be terrorized. And I can deal with it very well with films. I can take it. And some of my favorite films... Some of my favourite films are horror films. But when it comes to games, I've never been able to do it. And I think the reason is that distinguishing feature of games. You are in control and you have to push yourself forwards. So whenever you end up terrified, you can't just stand in on the spot. You have to keep moving. In a film, the film does that for you and it paces things out for you. In a game, you have to do that to yourself. And it's a weird and unique kind of torture that horror games can inflict on a person that I've never really been able to get to grips with. I can kind of get why people would do that. Like, it, to some people, it might be a test of bravery, and to others, they might not feel the paralysis of fear that I have always felt with games. Certainly, though, when I'm watching films, I also tense up, and I probably am sort of with the best ones frozen on the spot. Certainly, like, there's moments where I don't want to look behind me while I'm watching a good film for fear of what I'll see.
Yep.
So I don't, and I am very like tense and nervous. But the film is modulating and moderating the journey. I don't have to control that. That's what games really...
Just press pause.
But that's the point. That's the point. Like, if I had the choice is taken out of my hands with the film.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The choice is taken out of my hands with the film. And that's a good thing for me, because I can't push myself forward through those horrifying moments.
Isn't it with horror films, there's a thing about how, like, it's the same with, like, roller coasters, that it's people are trying to... Is it linked like Stone Age people, that how we used to, 18,000 years ago, that we used to naturally have these kind of moments of adrenaline and fear because of having to hunt, and then now, obviously, that's taken out of our hands. We don't usually have to hunt for things, so we don't get that. So that's... I'm sure there's been a study about a link about, like, roller coasters and probably horror films as well, I'd guess, that people are trying to get that kind of adrenaline burst. Roller coasters, just to seek into that, I really enjoy roller coasters and I would actively seek to go on a roller coaster. That comes from having ingrained from my mum at a very early age that roller coasters are the devil incarnate and absolutely terrifying. She's absolutely terrified of roller coasters. So then when I then became an adult and was able to, I'll try it myself. Oh my gosh, they're amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they share the exact same features that I've just outlined with films. You are placed in a situation where you're not in control of precisely. The journey. And you were... It's a controlled terror.
Yeah.
And I do like the controlled terror. It's when I have to control the terror myself that it becomes a problem.
Yep, got it.
So, I mean, that's the a bit of the background with the game. In terms of what the game actually is, I've kind of touched on it. And so I'm going to flesh that out a little bit more now. And then I'm going to tell you, or the audience, because you know what's happened. And I might have mentioned it to them as well, actually, in the past. But I'll tell you what happened to me and Hannah. I think Hannah was there at the time, although I might have remembered that wrongly. But what happened to me while I was playing this game, and then we'll play it. So the game follows a pair of twins called Mio and Mayu Amakura. The game follows a pair of twins called Mio and Mayu Amakura, who are exploring I think it's a childhood play spot that they used to enjoy. Like, I don't know if their grandma used to take them there or something like that. And whilst they're there, a red butterfly, like an astonishingly red butterfly, flies around them. And one of the sisters is sort of sirened into the woods by the allure of this red butterfly. And she chases this butterfly through the woods, her sister chasing after her. And they end up in a village called Minakami Village. Minakami Village is an abandoned village in the middle of the woods. I mean, sounds like a horror film. And when they try and leave, they find that they can't.
Right.
They then...
What do you mean they can't?
The village won't let them leave.
Right. Like that. There's that French...
It's not that they... Oh, I just can't.
Trying to establish like what
it's
happens.
Too nice.
There's the that French, I can't remember the name of it, the one about where the people came back as zombies and the village was, and when they tried to leave the village, they automatically kind of found themselves back in the other side of the village.
Yeah, like a loop.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's how this works. I can't remember because I was too busy shitting myself.
Yeah, that's fair. Or in Ghosts where they try to leave and they just, it's the same
end
kind
up
of thing.
Back at the, right. I can't remember exactly how that mechanic works where, you know, games, it's probably just mist or invisible walls or something. I don't know. But the point is that in plot terms, they are trapped in this village and the village is the thing that's trapped them. Or the more likely, actually, I don't know for definite because I haven't played it to the end, more likely the inhabitants of the abandoned village have trapped them.
Hang on, inhabitants abandoned?
Yes.
What?
The village is inhabited by... lost and wandering and vengeful, at least in my experience, spirits who you find out fairly early on, or it's very definitely implied fairly early on, that they intend to do some harm to these twins and that it's no accident that the twins have ended up there. There is a part of the plot, there is a what do you call it? There is a ritual that the village used to perform. I don't know if the ritual has a name. I should have maybe looked out, but I didn't want to spoil it for myself in a weird way. I'm kind of hoping that you're going to get through this game.
Well, let's see.
Yeah, there's a ritual that these spirits want to perform using these twins, and I think that the ritual involves ritual sacrifice of the twins. And so these two twins are in quite big turmoil. And the only defense, and also one of them, I think the one chasing the butterfly, injures themselves or has a bad foot or something. I don't know if it's like, what I mean by that is I don't know if it's like a condition that they have,
right,
maybe like a club foot or something like that they were born with, or whether it happened in chasing the butterfly. But one of them is maimed to some degree and has limited mobility as a result. So I think you play as the non-injured one, and you're then tasked with defending the injured party. The way that you do that is using a camera. You've already mentioned it's called the camera obscura, and
that's a thing, isn't it?
Camera obscura is a different thing. So a camera obscura is a way to project an image,
right? Okay.
So ignore that.
Okay,
here the camera obscura is basically, it's just a camera, but a spirit camera. And you use that by taking pictures of these spirits. You can trap the spirit in a photograph.
You can bust them.
Yeah, basically, it's Ghostbusters, but terrifying. That is actually, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was definitely, there was a film made about this whole concept as well. That's actually based on a superstition that is prevalent around in certain Asian countries, whereby taking a photograph of somebody is a way of stealing a portion of their soul.
Oh, right.
There might also be some like tribes in South America that have a notion towards that too. So yeah, taking an image of somebody, certainly a picture, that's a way to try and steal a soul. And this game kind of plays on that and builds it out into a whole game mechanic whereby you get different camera roles and they have different powers that can then affect the spirits in different ways. The spirits are of the Ring and Grudge type.
That's what, so I'm picturing, you're saying spirits, I'm picturing the whole black hair in front of the...
Creeping along the floor and the walls and passing by open doors in creepy, creepy ways. You are very slow moving, so are they, and that's worse. That's worse than being chased by fast zombies. The whole thing is creeping and terrifying.
I'm really excited about playing this.
Yeah, I'm really excited for you to play it. I want to see the game. moving. My last, I'm not going to read it out, but I'm going to show you my last, I'm going to show you my last note. That's the last note.
Scary AF.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary AF. My experience of playing this game, the thing that made me stop. So I played it about 3 times and I can remember them fairly vividly because the first time was at nighttime and it was on my own.
So was this when you have 3 kind of bites to the cherry kind of like trying to, or was it 3 separate kind of like, okay, I've played it once, I've got so scared, right, I'm going to start again a second time, or is it like...
3 bites of the cherry, yep. Progressive, trying to get through it, trying to get started with it, to be honest. First time was on my own in the nighttime, in my bedroom alone, and it was too scary, so I stopped. The next day, I tried to play it during the daytime, it was too scary, so I stopped.
Oh, that's what I was banking on, today, but...
Oh, no. We'll be fine, I'm sure we will. The third time was at nighttime in my bedroom, but Hannah was with me, so I thought I'd be okay. We were playing it, I was crapping myself, but I was also being brave.
Being a bit brave.
Showing off in front of...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the lady.
What a true man.
Yes. And then something happened. I can't remember the specifics of what happened in the game, but something happened in the game and my desk was next to my television, but not close enough to my television that it could like transfer vibrations. And my TV was pretty crappy. Like, it's not some kind of bass heavy sound system. But there was a pile of coins that I'd put on there. It was about 5 or 6 centimeters long, tall. Long? 5 or 6 centimeters tall of coins, and something happened in the game. It shat me up, but then these coins threw themselves across the room. I'm not even joking. They were... I didn't have a massive room, but the desk was on the opposite side of the room to my door, and the coins ended up at my door.
Yeah, I can't explain that.
I turned the game off, never played it again.
Yep, that seems fair. So now we're going to play it today and just look around your desk. There's things that can be hurled off the desk.
Oh, yeah, but a different house.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Spirits are definitely tied to property, aren't they? Not people.
So. Yeah.
Depends on the film and the game. Let's play. So there was an added element today, watching that game be played.
What, by a fool?
Yeah, I think that was the added element, and we both agree. Watching you play that game was both terrifying and frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like watching Mr. Bean play it.
It was worse, because at least there's an intent toward comedy from Mr. Bean. And I don't think the intent is there with you.
Well,
Just an aptitude.
I don't see what your problem is, that, you know, there's a ghost attacking me and I'm fumbling with the camera.
It was horrible.
And then like, oh, I'm just going to back up here into this corner so it can't get me. I'm just going to pause the game and open up the help text to just double check what I'm doing.
I'm just going to take a photograph of the corner of this room where nothing is. It was horrible. Horrible. It was horrible in a different way, though, and I think that it taps into what I was saying about films. I wasn't in control here, so I found it immensely more palatable in terms of the horror and it being meted out not by me. I'm not doing it to myself, mm-hmm. so I found it much easier to take.
Okay, that's good.
How was it for you? You were playing.
Yeah, just consistently and constantly on eggshells, just thinking, what's around the corner?
Yeah.
The game does an excellent job of ramping up and ratcheting up the tension at different points. Sometimes as well, for no apparent reason. There was one point I was in a room and this music kicked in that was really eerie. And, okay, there's obviously clearly something here. No, it's just a room with a nothing in, I don't think. And, yeah, the music really set me on edge.
Yeah. And I think there's a purposefulness to it doing that, because it doesn't want you to settle into a familiar stride. It wants you to feel like you don't know what's going to happen at any time. There are musical cues, but the musical cues aren't going to be your friends. They're not going to be helpful to you. At least they're not going to be helpful to you all of the time. So yeah, you can go into a room, the music can ramp up and then nothing can happen.
Yeah.
And you can go into another room and the music will ramp up and something will happen.
Or you go into a room and there's no music and something happens as well. Like, the game's constantly trying to wrong foot you to put you on edge. And it did that successfully. We talked in the half time about a film that I couldn't quite remember the name of, but you said it was Wreck, the Spanish film, zombie film. And I said about there's a shot towards the end of that called the 270 shot, where there's a camera's put up. And they're checking in this attic to see what's up there. And it does 180 degrees round and there's nothing. And the theory of the shot is that then your brain then thinks, oh, okay, I've done halfway. The chance of there being something in the other half is diminished now. And as it gets to the 270 degree point, there is then something at that point. And this game, Fatal Frame Project 02, is doing that throughout. It's trying to undermine your expectations, and okay, you think this is going to happen, actually it's not going to happen in that way, or it's not going to happen at all, or it's going to happen but a lot worse than you think it is. And I really enjoyed that, because I did enjoy playing this.
Yeah.
Which I was quite surprised about. Like, I enjoyed the experience of being unsettled.
Terrified.
I didn't find it terrifying. I found it unnerving.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I said as well. Like, seeing the game being played, I wasn't in the same mode as I was before. I thought of this line, and I'm going to use it. Whilst you've been exercising ghosts, I've been exercising demons.
Nice.
Because
lovely bit of business.
I felt more at ease watching you play the game, which was nice. But also there was a tension to it and an anxiety to the actual game itself, as opposed to me and my experience. That I could see more clearly because I wasn't having to do it all myself.
Mm-hmm. And nothing's being flung off your desk at the moment, so that's good.
No ghostly goings on, which is nice. Yeah, the game feels, I don't know if we've played enough to be able to say a master of its own intent in the horror and fear and terror terms. But it definitely feels like it's got a firm grasp on how to deliver that kind of experience.
Yeah.
And to, as you were saying, to subvert what your expectations are. So we all have this generic understanding of horror. Even if you're not overly immersed in it, we all kind of know that there are certain things that happen in horror films or horror games. And this game knows that too, and it was then using those generic conventions to surprise you and terrorize you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do think that, I mean, how do you feel it would be if you were playing this, as I explained, I was in the dark on your own?
I categorically would not have played as much of that had I been playing this in the dark by myself. I don't think I'd have to be honest, I don't think I'd have played it at all, because I think just the sheer concept of playing the game in the dark by myself, I'd have been put off completely. Mm. And so in the first half, I don't really tend to lean towards these. But just looking at the front cover, we talked about how the front cover, the box art itself, is quite eerie as well. It's this black with this red border, and it's got the twins in the middle, the whole classic ring outfit with the hair down in front of the face. That would have put me off straight away. It's a very well done, very well constructed front cover, but I'd have seen that and just gone, nope.
yeah, I didn't. And that was the surprising thing. I think I was in a mode where... So at this point, if it was about 2005, I was really kind of finding a stride with games, but also immensely open to new experiences. Mm. And my taste was broadening and broadening and broadening, and I was interested in trying all sorts of different things. And I think that despite having played Resident Evil, Resident Evil 2, and knowing about Resident Evil 3, and knowing full well that I didn't want to be chased down any corridor by any giant, hulking, nemesis-y type person, knowing that I'd kind of gone, horror games aren't for me, I was compelled enough by Fatal Frame's premise to, and that it was doing something differently, that I wanted to give it a try.
And you thought you go right in at the deep end. Rather than trying to do some baby steps to get to that point, you go straight in, almost like the antithesis of aversion therapy, just go straight in with the...
What are the baby steps to get to this?
I don't know what the baby steps would be, but my point is that you've gone for something that is billed as being extremely unsettling.
Yeah, but I didn't know that. That's the point. Whole point of what I said in the first half. I wasn't aware of... And actually, I don't know if Neil Druckmann had made his statement on that at that point. The point that the game came out, and certainly if he had, I probably wouldn't have known about it anyway. But I wasn't completely aware of just how terrifying everyone thought this game was. Like I'd read a bit around it before asking for it for Christmas or however I managed to get it.
So you got this as a Christmas present?
I think so, yeah. I think I did.
I love the idea of you unwrapping and getting that box art. Happy Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I probably got... Around this time, I probably did get a couple of horror-y bits. I think around this time, I got 28 Days Later for Christmas. That was one of the ones that I found ahead of Christmas, and me and Hannah watched it.
Classic.
Yeah.
I think by contrast, Christmas 2005, I got Super Monkey Ball on PlayStation 2, which is probably about as far away from this as you could get.
How much have you played of that? All of it?
No.
No, about as much as I've played of this.
Probably, actually, yeah.
Yeah. For different reasons.
But similar to you, I was trying to broaden my horizons. That was a game where people were, you know, saying about how amazing it was. So I thought I'd give it a go. And yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. So in terms of what this game does differently to Resident Evil, because I kind of said that was one of the selling points for it. It is very much, you're not a hero in this.
Mm.
And that's something that came across very clearly in watching you play it. This is a game about people who are vulnerable.
Yes.
You're not equipped with an overpowered shotgun that can blast zombies' heads off, or ghosts in this case. You're equipped with a camera. And I think the notion that there was a passivity or that vulnerability was compelling to me. That was one of the reasons that I was interested in giving this a go. And certainly we were talking in the break about horror films, and one of the things that I like about certain types of horror film is that's the exact same thing. It's when a film can hit you where you think you're safe, that I get really creeped out and affected by them at that point. Case in point, a film that I thought was going to be a bit rubbish was Paranormal Activity, and because of the domestic setting, and because it all takes place, it all revolves around the bedroom and the bed specifically. And that really hit me where it hurt, if you like, because for myself and for I remember very vividly actually being in this situation. For myself and for most people, your bed is where you hide when you're a child and you're scared.
Yep.
You know, like if you're scared of the dark, you put your head under the covers and you hide and you go to sleep.
Yep.
Or whatever. So for a whole film to put you in a position where that safe place is a vulnerable place, that's why that worked. And I think there's a similar thing at play here. You are playing two young women who have stumbled into a circumstance that they are completely at a loss as to what's going on. And they are not really, they're not physically powerful. They don't have anything really to give them a particular edge. And one of them also has a physical vulnerability where in the form of she's had an accident in the past and her leg's damaged.
Which we found out in the intro cutscene was had happened while the other girl, that while they were playing together in the forest that is right at the start of the game, the forest that the village is in. So there's a degree of the character you play as, a bit of ownership of that, a bit of guilt that comes through as well.
So we haven't actually talked about that during the break, but that's exactly what I realised. There's a guilt attached to her sister's vulnerability.
And therefore caring for
her. Yeah, and also like a need to protect her.
Yeah.
A protectiveness that that is instilled. Oh, and I think there's storytelling in that first set of FMVs. I think the fact that it's delivered that to us in what was actually quite a very quite a small snippet.
Yeah.
I thought that was really well done, and in amongst games that so the FMV at this point was somewhat. It was slightly overused, to say the least. And I think this game falls into that to some degree as well. However, when it was using it pretty well to convey elements of story and to do that in a concise and precise way. So that was nice to see.
I think the thing with the girls that struck me was how I really enjoyed the way the game unfolded as they were seeing that they were the avatar that I was understanding or not understanding what was happening at the same rate that they were, you know, these scraps of notebooks that were on the floor and these ghosts and spooky things that were happening around that they were reacting to it as I was reacting to it. And I thought that was a fantastic way to make the player again, put them on edge and put them into it as well. Just linking back as well to the Paranormal Activity thing before I forget it. Another thing that I think the game did to its advantage was the use of fixed camera angles. In the same way that Paranormal Activity is all fixed cameras, it gives it a sense of voyeurism. You're seeing the spooky activities unfolding in front of you in this domestic setting. This game uses the same thing as well, but uses it only in indoor areas. So the outdoor areas, the camera tracks and it follows, and there's less fixed elements, whereas the indoor areas, are all fixed cameras, so it gives you that sense of you're spying on what's going on, but also adds to that sense of them being entrapped and restricted as well. So the fact that the camera is actively adding to the storytelling and atmosphere as well, I think is a massive achievement.
Yeah, it's definitely not the first game that's had a fixed camera in the horror genre. Resident Evil obviously did it to a very great effect for a lot of people. I feel like this is a personal thing, but for me, the camera angles, the shots that it chose, that they chose in this game, they were really well considered.
There was a lovely one where you went up a staircase and the camera was put at the bottom of the staircase looking up, so it really disorientated you as you walked up the staircase because it was such an unusual angle to see the character walking up.
Yeah. And on the more mobile camera in the open spaces, in the outside areas, I got a weird, it's very, very smooth.
Yes.
It glides. And I really got the sense of like the degree of voyeurism there was even higher in a way that felt like I kind of felt like I was following them, if that makes sense. So yeah, I didn't. It even that was a thing that put me a little bit on edge because it felt like I was being followed as the player. Also, you said about the avatar nature of these characters. That's quite often, certainly in third person games, that's the intent.
Yes,
a lot of the time. However, I feel like here they've done that. They've set their characters up. They've built their characters in such a way that I feel like you share more here with them than maybe you do with other characters. Mm-hmm. So when you're a hero, it's okay, like in another game, when you're Lara Croft, it's okay, like you are the avatar, but also you don't really have all that much in common with that character. She's a high-flying, arse-kicking, gun-toting adventurer.
That's what I say about me.
Maybe 10 years ago. Not so much now. It's wish fulfillment there. Here, it's not at all. It's nowhere near wish fulfillment. If anyone's wishing for this, then to feel as vulnerable as it makes you feel.
In a spooky abandoned village.
Yeah, I feel for you.
One last thing about the way the game ratchets up the tension then is when the ghosts appear, the screen becomes very staticky. And again, that adds to that sense of you being out of control, that things are happening and you can't necessarily react to them in the way that you would like to, because it, again, the game disorients you. And I really like that use of static, the way it does that.
Yep, agreed. I do have some niggles. I think that at this point in time, there was a bit of a conversation starting to happen, at the very least, about help text and the overuse of help text and the over-reliance on help text to deliver game mechanics. This game definitely falls into that category. There's a lot of helpful hints and helpful pop-ups messages to explain how to do things rather than showing. And it would be nice if that wasn't the case, but at the same time, I am nitpicking a little bit, because I think everything else seemed very well done.
But the flip side of that as well, the actual gameplay itself, for some time I was meandering around this indoor area trying to figure out what to do next, and actually quite enjoyed the experience of being helpless, because games nowadays, you'd probably get, you know, be an objective marker, or there'd be a trail or something would pop up to tell me exactly where to go to and how to do it. Whereas this, it was that hands-free approach, just, okay, I'm going to figure it out myself. And I enjoyed that experience of going back to rooms I'd already been to and looking at them again afresh to try and figure out what to do. And eventually what happened was I went to a room it was the room where the music had gone up quite a lot earlier on in the game. And there was this horrible lump under a carpet that looked body-shaped. And I was really trying to investigate it because I thought that was what it was. And the game wouldn't let me. But I liked that, the fact that it wasn't then spelling it out for me. I had to kind of make up for myself what on earth it was under this carpet. And then I tried to leave this room, and then suddenly this panel popped open. And again, why is that suddenly popping open? And there was a key behind that I needed to use to get into the next area. But as I said, I liked the fact that I was having to actively search for that.
Yeah, there was a hostility in the game design that really helped to emphasize that you are the intended victim here. And I liked that when you went to that room first, you didn't actually trigger the thing that would allow you to progress. You had to go out of the room and then go back to the room a second time, which is really smart. And so there's multiple things. I thought we were wrapping up, but I'm quite glad that you brought this up, because you have said that you actively enjoyed sort of being left to feel lost and to not know what to do. And that is something that I would say that you struggle with.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it suited the game style.
And on top of that, that sequence that you've outlined, the fact that you went into the room, you did do a good job of like investigating everything in that room. Then you left the room, you wandered around the house aimlessly, like, oh, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And then you returned to the room, and it was only on returning to the room that the game allowed the progression. So it's kind of, there was an intentionality behind forcing you to have to wander around the room, wander around the house going, I don't know where I'm supposed to be going, to then return to the room that will allow you to progress, but only after that second time. That degree of hostility towards the player here absolutely, makes sense and creates this experience that you wouldn't have had otherwise of like going, I don't want to be here and I also can't get out and I don't know what I'm doing. I really like that. It's a really smart, hostile design choice.
Yeah, because I tried to get out of the house because I thought, okay, I'm done here. Mm. So, but there was a door where they made a big thing about there being a padlock with a ginger key that I needed to get through this door. So I thought, okay, I'll go and try and see if I can go outside, and then went to the door. And did it say it was locked? And was there some sound on the other side of the door or something?
Yeah, some weird moaning. Horrible moaning.
Yeah. Nasty.
Yeah. Dark. I don't think I'll be playing it I still don't think I'll be playing it. I think I'm more open to the notion of playing it, but I don't think if I was in control that I would enjoy it. But it was nice to see it being played, and it was nice to go back to it. It was 20 years ago, pretty much, that I saw this game last.
There you go.
Mm.
And as I said, you've put some demons to rest.
To some degree, yeah.
So what happened next with the series then?
Project Zero 3. Yeah. Well, actually, that's not true. This game was ported to the Xbox as a director's cut. And the director's cut, I can't remember everything that it had, but it had a first-person mode where you play the whole game in first person. Which is an interesting one, since I feel like the transition between third and first person, first person being how you control the camera obscura, I feel like that was instrumental in kind of creating a degree of vulnerability.
Yeah, we talked about the use of camera angles, the fixed cameras inside, and how that contributed massively to the atmosphere.
Yeah.
If that's then taken away,
Yeah, Xbox.
Yeah.
I don't know. We should have a look at that at some point, maybe. So that was what was next for this game. Then it's kind of, I mean, it persists. The game, the series does still exist. It went on a bit of a tangent whereby the fourth game in the series, Maiden of Blackwater, was a Wii U exclusive.
Oh, right.
Which makes a lot of sense in so much as you're using the camera still and you've got the Wii U tablet or a gamepad, I think it was called, wasn't it? So you can then use that in a very tactile way to represent what's happening in the game. So yeah, it was there. And it was also, I think, released episodically. So that was an interesting one. And you got the first episode for free, which was a thing that, I mean, it still does happen, actually, doesn't it? I was going to say it's a thing that happened at one point with games. That was a bit of a side track that they took. I've just said, did I say four or five for Maiden of Blackwater? I can't remember. It was number five. More recently, they have remastered number four, which is Mask of the Lunar Eclipse. And that came out last year, March last year. So, yeah, it's still banging on. But in terms of an actual new release in the series, I don't think there's been one for some time since Maiden of Blackwater, in fact.
Which was 2014, we've just checked as well. So quite a while ago.
Yep. And that's it.
That's that.
Yeah.
I was going to make some analogy about putting the camera in the case, but
it was... No, you don't need to.
I don't need to.
You need to do the rap.
It was silly. I need to do the rap.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do a beat for me then?
No.
Oh, you mean the wrapping up. I'm with you now. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. If you've enjoyed, remember to join us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and like, share, subscribe, rate, and review.
Yes, please. Thank you for sticking to the end of this episode, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.
Lots of love. Bye.
What?